Leslie's going to actually introduce our speaker, Rusty, because she did such a great job of doing it the last time he spoke. I want to hear that again.
Hi, my name is Leslie, and I'm an alcoholic. I was just sharing with Rosemary Friday. We were talking about Rusty. And I said, I remember the first time I sat in a meeting with him. I was whining about something, and he straightened me out with his chair right after me really fast. And I thought, who is this man, and who the hell does he think he is straightening me out? And this was a couple of years ago, and a few meetings after that, I didn't hear anything he had to say. I didn't want to hear it. And when I became open-minded enough to listen, I loved what he shared. And he's really been so helpful to me, like conversations I've had with him outside of here, and then just watching his actions, walking the walk. You know, he really does that. And he's done that for a lot of people in here, I'm sure. So with that, I give you Rusty.
I'm Rusty Jones, and I'm a very grateful alcoholic. Has this been fixed? No. I'll be careful with the podium. I'm Rusty Jones. I'm a very grateful alcoholic. And I'll start out. I was born in Savannah, which I don't even remember. My parents moved to this area when I was about a year and a half old. I've never been back to Savannah. So I don't spend a lot of time talking about Savannah. I went to school all over. I went to 8 different grammar schools in 8 years. It took me 8 years to get through grammar school. I was not the sharpest knife in the drawer. And moving around didn't help. So, it was in the 8th grade where I became addicted. Competition was my first drug of choice. Before alcohol got involved, before any other addictions. My father was a very competitive individual in a lot of ways, and you're number one or you're nothing, and he taught me championship attitude. And I hope to get into it as we go, how that feeds into this disease. High school, football, track, I had an attitude. You're number one or you're nothing. And that was, the cream always comes to the top. I was taught that later. But it was all about, it wasn't about me being a part of anything ever. It was all about me proving I was better than. And that's what I was raised to do, was prove. So, my story is all about having too much to prove, basically. And that's kind of, that played a major role in getting me here. High school, I was 8th grade, I was the city champion, pole vault. In football, I was captain of the 8th grade football team. It was more important to me than it was to, I guess, to a lot of other people. I had more to prove, and I proved it. I was a sophomore state champion in Georgia, AAA. That wasn't a 4A back then. This was 1965. 63 was my sophomore year. I was a Georgia state champion as a sophomore. Lost the state champion. Notice the way I explain that. Lost the state. I came in second, but I lost the title. I was defeated. I was beaten. I was broken. I was embarrassed with the silver medal. I heard something on the radio just recently on the Olympics. Says, silver medalist feels a lot better than the I mean, the gold medalist, the bronze medalist feels better than the silver medalist a lot of times because, you know, the silver medalist just lost. The bronze medalist, you're a part of the winning. But being, and I believe I was born with this disease. I've seen it all my life, the makings of an alcoholic. My first drunk was, you know, I went from high school, I went to Mississippi State on a pole vaulting scholarship to be the greatest. Well, collegiate athletics is a whole different deal. I lettered once or twice, and, you know, and that was the best I could do. I never set any records, never. So I didn't know what I went to school. I ended up with a degree, but I wasn't what I went there for. You know, I went there to prove something that I couldn't prove because I wasn't the fastest, the tallest, the biggest. I wasn't the best at anything. So my first fraternity party, I remember my first drunk, my first blackout, a bottle of Usher's Green Stripe Scotch. I remember buying the bottle of scotch. I remember it was Usher's Green Stripe. I couldn't tell you whether it was a quart, a fifth, or a liter. It was one of those larger sizes, but a lot more than I got the big bottle. And next thing I remember, I'm sitting, leaning up against my roommate's car in the cold, with about that much left in the bottle of scotch. Don't remember the fraternity party. Don't remember anything. So I left scotch alone and went back to beer. That didn't work right. Let's leave that alone. Anyway, a series of drunks in college. All compensation for my inability to prove I was something I wasn't, which is what I was trying to do. And it took me a long time to realize I had to get sober to come to that conclusion. So a lot of this about me, I only learned in hindsight. Let me be real clear on that. So I got through college. I didn't do that well because I wasn't there for scholastic reasons. I was there to prove I was something I wasn't. Anyway, I got in very little trouble. I had my ID card pulled once by the campus police and a bunch of, and I could have lost my scholarship, but it was overlooked by the department. There was a lot more drinking on campus than in the athletic department, and they couldn't have been blind to it. They just chose to overlook a lot. It's the only thing I could figure. Anyway, the next came the Marine Corps. And I did a lot of drinking in the Marine Corps. In the reserves, I was either sober or I was drunk. A lot, on too many different occasions. There was no a little bit drunk for me. I was either, I could handle a few beers and get away with it from time to time, but any hard liquor, and it was blackout time. So I had to was trying to do the impossible again with drinking, with proving myself. Anyway, I went from, I married a young lady right out of Mississippi State that I met at, in school, and we did the Marine Corps together. And everything was, I guess, the way it was supposed to be. My disease, and this is where I really relate to Bill's story a lot. Whatever was happening in my life, as my life progressed the way I thought it was supposed to, going from getting my degree and my commission and my career, my alcoholism is progressing right along with my collecting what I today refer to as the symbols of success. I felt terrible about me. I had not proved what I set out to prove. In my mind, I was a loser with all the symbols of success that I had collected, the degree and the commission and the house with the picket fence and the, you know, I built one of these little forts in the backyard for my two toddlers. You know, and there I was at 33 years old with having accomplished everything I set out to do except control my drinking and prove the impossible to me. I think too much to prove is a common thread that runs. A lot of you, I know what I mean by that. And how it expresses itself can be very different, but anyway, I got through OCS, Officers Candidate School, and was commissioned and didn't do any drinking there except on weekends where we got totally drunk. But I only drank with people who drank the way I drank in the Marine Corps. That's just, you know, it's, I don't know how I did it, but I attracted men, or we played in the reserves of the dice game called a cap shifting and crew. Some of you military people, you know, it's a dice game, and you shoot dice for, and loser buys the next round, and everybody drinks a round, and so everybody's drinking the same amount. So nobody's, we all drink a round of dice and a round of beer, a round of dice and a round of beer. And I was starting, I reached the point where I was blacking out on just beer. Tons of it, but then 79, my wife decided she'd had enough of my, not my drinking, my rage. We were beginning to struggle in the marriage for a lot of reasons. And we'd agreed when we, before we got married, that we'd find a church we could both be a part of and no liquor in the house. Two prenuptial agreements, neither one of them worked out for us. So, you know, she'd had enough. She left, and I had one of the lowest bottoms I've ever hit in the privacy of my own home. And I could not begin to tell you how alone I was with me that night. The house meant nothing. The car, the new truck and the driveway meant nothing. She was gone, took my sons with her back to her mother. And I found my solace in a bottle of liquor. And I stayed drunk from the time she left till I found these rooms in February 82. I'm out of my house, survived those 3 years. I don't know anybody survives staying drunk the way I did for those 3 years. I don't know how anybody collects all the symbols of success and still feels like a loser. But I did. And I don't know how people walk around with my track record and my thinking, two entirely different databases. Something's wrong. And I knew something was wrong, and I got some of the best and some of the worst psychiatric care available. It was all guesswork. In February of 79, Judy left, my father passed away, and I came unglued. I lost it. Nothing I'd ever done meant anything. In my mind, I was a total loser. With one friend, a bottle of liquor. Anyway, my mother and brother came out to Texas and got me, brought me back to this area where I grew up. And I remember right before then I saw my psychiatrist. A lot of times they say, hold it, you know, I want you to hold up your hands like this. See how steady you are. And I held up my hands and I was shaking. And he put me on a seizure medication. I lied about my drinking. I told him something or whatever, but, you know, I was in the borderline going into the DTs and being treated for seizure disorder. Couldn't drink on that medication. Well, I didn't for about 10 days. And then I had to. I had to drink. Doctor's orders, on seizure medication. I could not stay sober. I drank. Got a DUI. The only DUI. The only time before I came into these rooms that I stayed sober, the longest I stayed 10 days was just more than I can have. Right after that, I remember one day, the only day I ever drank one beer that I remember just having a beer. I was at work on another man's clock. That was important to my age group back then. I was on another man's clock. I just simply dropped my tools, went across the street to the 7-Eleven and got a tall boy. 16-ounce Miller Lite. I could not go 4 hours without a drink on that day. I had reached, and I knew I was in trouble. Psychiatrically, I knew I was in trouble. My psychiatrist simply said I had a brain chemistry imbalance. Well, I couldn't function. I had to get him to write. I had some trouble as on my last reserve duty, 2 weeks active duty during the summer, trying to salvage my career. He picked up captain in reserves during my, somehow, I don't know how I did that. The Marine Corps gave me the tools to look good, to project that professional image and hide me from the world. And that was the only thing that kept me functional. And I have to be real careful with that today because I can still get back into that mentality of total. Look at the shell. Don't see the cripple inside. And it just broke down. I had to get a letter from my psychiatrist. And he had to call it something, and he had to call it paranoid schizophrenia. So I came into this program. And I was going to the Buckhead Mental Health Center and I saw a therapist, and we started talking, and I told her about my DUI, and she wanted me to take antabuse. And I came up with a laundry list for her of about 15 reasons I could not take antabuse. And she didn't buy any of them. She wasn't going to see me unless I took the antabuse. So under those conditions, I came into these rooms barred from the Buckhead Mental Health Center for conduct unbecoming of the mentally ill. That's what I came here and gave you people to work with. It wasn't much. I made an emergency mental health phone call. I was running out of medication. She wouldn't see me. The doctor was listening to her and forcing me to go to the VA, and I knew if I went to the VA, they were going to put me away. I just knew that. I knew. And they probably would have. So I called the Fulton County Emergency Mental Health, and she told me, the lady answered the phone. I told her what was going on, and my medication had stopped working, and blah, blah, blah. And she told me, call Narcotics Anonymous. And I started talking, and she listened to another, and she said, call Narcotics Anonymous. Well, I wasn't welcome anywhere. Nobody would listen to me, and I was supposed to call Narcotics Anonymous. And I'd never heard of Narcotics Anonymous. I'd heard of Alcoholics Anonymous, but not Narcotics Anonymous. Anyway, so I called Narcotics Anonymous, and they babysat me for a couple of days. And on a Sunday morning, February the 21st, they sent me to a place called the Atlanta Biscayne Room to be dried out the old way by the drunks. And the Biscayne Room took me in and dried me out and showed me up and told me basically the same thing in there. It told me don't put nothing in. So I stopped taking all my medications, prescription and otherwise. And I took nothing. And I got a list of phone numbers, though. And if you're new, get some phone numbers. You will need them. It's just a matter of time. You will need them. And I was basically told pick up a phone, not a drink. And I had a choice. I could pick up a phone, not a drink. But I had all these phone numbers. And my sponsor and I came up with this backup plan to, if all else fails and I just couldn't make it without any medication, I would get to the Grady Hospital sober. He was an old Navy man. I was an old Marine. Yep, not that old then, but, I was had some time in the Corps. Anyway, I had a backup plan. And one of the things I learned in the Marine Corps, you don't have to think, you don't have to feel, you can just do what you're told. That's an option. And it was working. But we had a backup plan, and I was coming unglued. And I didn't have a car at this point. I was driving my brother's Ranchero. And I headed to Grady Hospital. And I was coming unglued, and I got lost. I was bouncing in and out of a blackout, sober, on nothing. I missed the turn between here and Grady Hospital. I ended up somewhere in Newnan. So apparently I missed more than one turn. Anyway, I'm sitting there doing it, and the car stops. It just stopped. I could see some lights up ahead, but I just pulled over. I pulled up the hood or something. I don't know. Anyway, the first car that came by stopped. Guy stopped and asked if I needed a ride. Asked me, where are you trying to get us? We're trying to get to Grady Hospital. I said, well, you're in Newton. But that, those lights right up there is the hospital. I can take you up there. And I got in and said, he had a sip of vodka on the console. He said, you might do it off just with drink. I said, no, just, I don't need a drink. I need to get to the hospital. He said, okay. And he drove me up not a quarter mile to the Noonan Hospital tonight. I don't know what I said to them, but they shot me full of birds. Calm me down. You don't do that. Anyway, my fiance came and got me. I was engaged at the time. That's a whole other story. I haven't had time to get into that real deep. Water's shaking at some level back then. The government still does. Anyway, went down and started getting back on some medication. Thorazine's not my cup of tea. I think it switched me over to Haldol. My sponsor made some phone calls and explained to whoever, and I don't know how he pulled it off, but I went down to the Fulton County Detox and started seeing a psychiatrist down there and doing AAN psychiatry. This was before the term dual disorder got started. I don't know how long ago that got started, but this is before, you know. Rarely have we seen a person fail. You know, it talks about that all those two. That was me. I was one of those two with some grave mental and emotional disorders. But apparently I knew I had to be honest and willing, and I somehow survived a lot. But anyway, I get down there and I explain to the psychiatrist, you know, he prescribed something. I forgot what he prescribed. And he reached in his briefcase and he came out with this cartoon. And I'll never forget the cartoon. And I wish I could get another copy of it, but, you know, it's just a picture of this guy with his head in a wood press like this, and the cat, you know, said, screw it down another notch, you son of a bitch, I work better under pressure. So that touched me. I was, you know, if he could laugh about it, maybe I could too, you know. So thank God for a strength with a sense of humor. Anyway, I got, and oh, yeah, I mean, this was 25, 28 years ago. The medications for schizophrenia were pretty primitive by today's standards. Thank God for what we've got today. I'm still on medication. I take Abilify and Seroquel, which is a lot cleaner than Thorazine and Haldol. But we've learned a lot in these rooms, you know, and we don't take everybody off of everything anymore. We don't take newcomers off what doctors prescribe anymore. We've learned a lot in these rooms, thank God. And I hope the professional community has learned something from us. We've had to learn a lot from them. And that's, I don't want to get off into that. I've got some opinions that aren't exactly I've got a lot of opinion on outside issues that I'm trying to circumvent right now, so moving quite along. I just wasn't quite making it in Alcoholics Anonymous, even with medication. And I spent most of my, I made it my first, almost to my first year, and the director of the Biscayne Room, Maggie Harrison, and my sponsor. Maggie didn't tell me to go back to the hospital. She took me to the local VA and arranged for me to go to Augusta, Linwood, which was long term. And I was there 10.5 months, most of my second year. I was in the hospital. And I was certified schizophrenic explosive personality. And I was prescribed 2,000 milligrams of Thorazine daily. I was a zombie. And I left there a zombie. Well, I think we cut it down from 2,000 milligrams of Thorazine. We cut it down to 120 milligrams of Loxetane. Another older but goody. And anyway, fast forward, 8 years sober, or 6.5 years sober, I was doing a lot better, and the medications was better, and I was engaged to the Al-Anon of my choice. Things were looking up. I was working my way off my disability pension, engaged to the Al-Anon of my choice, and took on too much stress overload, and it all collapsed. It all collapsed. That was about 20 years ago, and all collapsed sober. But I didn't find it necessary to drink. You know, we got a backup plan, and I've always had a backup plan. I've got a backup plan right now. I've got him. And if I had anything to say to the newcomer, the new man, get the phone numbers. You're going to need them. It's just a matter of time. We're dealing with a killer disease that demands a solution. And it can be Alcoholics Anonymous, with or without professional help, with or without a lot of things. But the foundation of everything I have come to believe rests in don't drink and go to meetings. And being willing to allow you people to teach me what else is involved one day at a time. I'm a great believer in don't drink and go to meetings. I was so confused. If it had been any more complicated than that, I wouldn't have figured it out. But I figured out don't drink and go to meetings. And I'm more convinced now than ever before that if I don't drink and go to meetings, you people can teach me what else is involved. I was 30 days sober and I was told. It wasn't suggested. We didn't do it that way back then. I was told to get a sponsor. I got a sponsor. And therefore the backup plan and, you know, and all that, an old neighbor man is no longer with us. And then I started working with a female sponsor. The men and I were just, we weren't clicking at all. But I was sitting in a meeting at the old Night Owls group, and this female with a lot of time and I just clicked. The magic happened, and I asked her if she'd be willing to sponsor me. And the only thing she had to say or ask was, what step was I on? I said 11. She said, wrong, dummy, the first. And that started a relationship with a real sponsor. It saved my life. And then some people questioned, why was I working with a female sponsor? I needed a male sponsor. So I talked to this guy named Hal Collier, who some of you remember. And he gave me his, and I asked him if he'd consider working with me. He knew I was working with a very well-known female, whose name I did not use from the podium. She can remain anonymous to the best of her limited ability. Hal simply said, you want what I got, come get it. And I thought he was the most arrogant bastard I'd ever met. And he was. But he knew the book. He knew the book. And everybody at the Biscayne knew that he knew the book. I went around and I tried to get up. I talked to other people about a sponsor. About four or five different people had told me, said, you need to talk to Hal Collier. No, I didn't like the man. Didn't want to talk to him. But, you know, I learned to respect the man first. Learned to love him later. So you don't have to click with, you know, you just got to, you know. Respect has to be there. You don't have to like the sponsor. You don't have to love them, but you have to respect. If you don't respect them, you're not going to listen to them. It ain't going to work for you, them, or anybody else. Anyway. About a year and a half, or a few months later, I asked Hal why he had to say that. And he simply told me, he said, well, it was similar to what Roland had told him. What Roland had told Hal Collier was, you want what I got, come get it. But I got to tell you up front, there's a bear trap between us. Roland believed there's a bear trap. A wall of fear between the old timer and the newcomer. And the sponsor's job was to lead the newcomer through the wall of fear from where they were at to where, and through this process. So I'm not up here to talk about drinking liquor or taking drugs or psychiatric medication. What Kim said, read before I got up here was that I'm up here to tell you how I developed a relationship with God. And I had to develop a relationship with a few critical key individuals in these rooms. And I had to experience this process and have a psychic change. And the results of having experienced this process and that psychic change is I have a relationship with God, as I do not claim to understand God. I do not understand God. One of the things that was brought to my attention are the steps. They're plural and they're past tense. That leaves absolutely nothing for the alcoholic of my type to figure out up front. That removes all the confusion and all the computation. I still have two databases. My track record and what my head comes up with. I pay a lot more attention to my track record today and a lot less to my thinking, and I do a lot better. So if your databases between your ears and your track record aren't totally synchronized yet, I do better looking at my track record. I was taught that my track record sober would always be my best teacher, and it has proven to be. remember about 4 years, coming up on 4 years, I was sitting on the taxi stand, really upset with why I wasn't getting it together the way I thought I was in my time frame, based on my heart, and why I couldn't compete with my crib mates, my peers, and getting my life in the order I thought it was supposed to be in. And I was so frustrated. And up on that same taxi stand came a man by the name of Shaky Sam, who some of you remember. His situation, materially, financially, wasn't all that different from mine. But he'd been rhyming these rooms a long time, and he'd had a lot of teachers that hadn't been paying attention to. And I talked to Sam for about a few minutes, and I said, "What are we doing wrong? Why aren't we getting it together?" Sam simply looked at me. He said, "Rusty, I'm at peace with my priorities. I'm sorry you're not. I'm not too worried about anybody else's." But I walked away from that 12-step call was with the working knowledge that until I made peace with my priorities, there would be no quality serenity. Not like that man had. No matter what I've accomplished, acquired, earned, or was given, until I made peace with my priorities, I would never be serene. A few years later, I was learning a lot. I was on my way to an Al-Anon meeting in Decatur. I was getting the hell away from Biscayne and Napa to an Al-Anon meeting way before nobody knew me. I was on the bus. And up on that same bus came a guy named Big Steve. I don't know if any of you remember him or not. He had over 40 years at the time, and this was 15, 18 years ago. So anyway, he got on that bus and he said, "Rusty, have you ever heard of the Golden Rule?" And I said, "Yes, sir, you do unto others as you would have them do unto you." He said, "That's correct. Have you ever heard of the Silver Rule?" And I sat there and, "No, sir, I hadn't heard of the Silver Rule." He said, "Don't do anything for anyone that they should be doing for themselves." And I wrote that down. And he said, "Have you heard of the Iron Rule?" I said, "No, sir. I've not heard of the Iron Rule either." He said, "Do as much for yourself as you're doing for others." If I put those three together, see, I've got the tools. He didn't tell me what to do. He didn't give me any advice. He just gave me just laid out the rules of it. Just like Sam had done. I'm at peace with my priorities today, trying to learn to live by the three rules and the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. And it does get more complicated as time goes along. Alcoholics Anonymous is a 12-step program, not a plug-in-the-jug club. There's a lot more to this deal than don't drink and go to meetings. But it had to start out for me very, very simple. Don't drink, go to meetings. Foundation of willingness. Thank God no faith was required up front from me or I wouldn't have made it. And I've about rambled my time away without saying near anything I really wanted to say or getting to the... The reality is I've sidestepped a lot intentionally. The better part of my story isn't meeting material. That's why we have a meeting before the meeting and the meeting after the meeting. But I appreciate all of you showing up tonight. I hope somebody got something. And that's how I found God. I experienced the process. I'm still a drunk and a junkie looking for a quick fix. But you people taught me to trust the process. And in trusting that process, I found a God. And in finding a God, I found peace with my priorities and a semblance of balance at the three rooms. And I've been enabled and I've done some enabling. I'm okay with the word enabling. But I try to live by the three rules, and I'm more careful today what behaviors I choose to practice and endorse than ever before. And I see Tim over there ready to take it back. So I want to thank all of you for being here and giving me this opportunity.
Thank you, Rusty. Excellent job. I remember one of the first things that made sense to me as I was coming out of my fog was you said that you had come in this program with willingness, and somewhere between willingness and hope, you found faith. So that stuck with me, and I hope it sticks with everyone else too. Okay, so the seventh tradition, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting. Declaring outside contributions, your generous donations support this group and AA its own. And I've asked Harish to give out the chips.
Good evening, friends. My name is Harish. And I am an alcoholic, so I have the honor of doling out these tokens of sobriety. And the first one is the most precious one. That one was for me, anyway. It's really for me. It was like a symbol of peace, an international symbol of surrender. So. I guess the way it was explained to me was that if I think that I cannot do it by myself, there are people who can help me do it. And if I think I can hold off for go 24 hours without drink, you come get it. This saved my life. Is anyone willing to do this? All right. Then we have the only metallic chip here, and this is 30 contiguous days, nights, mornings, afternoons, contiguous. All right. Then I call it the walk of the rainbow. So this is the red one, starts from the bottom of the rainbow, and it's 3 months, or 90 days, and then yellow one, 6 months is the golden chip, and then green one is 3/4 of a year, 9 months, all right? And then you don't see, you're not scared of the blue lights anymore. It's clear, not blue.
I'm sorry, but I'm alcoholic. Proof of miracles happen, and that's 2 years' worth. Rusty, did I get your date right? It's the 22nd? Yes, sir. Mr. Russ Joseph, a very grateful alcoholic. His birthday is on the 18th of this month. If you're new, get some phone numbers. You will need them.
And Anyone else? Blue one? No. Okay, we offer this white moons, the second chance, and also third contiguous chance in the back. It's also left here if somebody wants to take it anonymously without telling it. All right.
Thank you. Very good job. Yeah, I put on the flyers the 22nd. So, 18th is the official day, right? I'm an alcoholic. Oh, thanks. Okay. Announcements.
My name is Mark, and I'm from the Keeps of the Rhythm Academy, doing one like the 80s
yesterday. Okay. Still have chairs, Frank?
Yes.
Orange and wine. $5 gets you one of our old chairs. And you know, you could get your whole living room if you want one a week. I love mine. And I'm something wrong with me. I'm an alcoholic. And there's still barbecue kickball picnic roll-a-thon on March 22nd at Murphy Candler Park. We got to have some other announcements. But that'll be a good time. It's out there, March 22nd, Murphy Candler Park. And that's the Ikipa.
If you'd like to become a member of NAB, you can see Captain and me.
Yeah, that's good.
And there's a service dinner coming up 27th.
Okay.
Law Page is the first pilot who was ever prosecuted for flying and driving. He's going to be the speaker. His story is in the big book.
Oh,
fabulous.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
What's his first name?
Grounded story, yeah.
Grounded. Okay. Yeah. You gotta make that one. That's gonna be great. And you don't have to be a member, I guess. Okay. Next week we've got Tommy Willett. He's gonna be telling his story, and right after that, the week after, Ed S. Ed's been sober a little over a year now, but he's really taken to the program, and he's the acting secretary of the newcomers group that meets in this room on Tuesday at 8 o'clock. So love to see a lot of you back here to support him on that, and I'm pretty sure Tommy will be a pretty big draw. He's always got a great perspective and a wonderful sense of humor. So, if there's nothing else, I'd like to remind everybody that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And for those who will, please join us in the Lord's Prayer.
Welcome to this morning.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Keep me on the back by the words of your
words.
Furthermore,
I'm going to go to the next slide.